Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate, they risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. Today, chaplain of Baylor University, Burt Burleson, sits down with Kirk Kaiser, award-winning songwriter and member of the Gospel Music Hall of Fame. This conversation was recorded November 19th, 2013, in the KWBU studios.
Welcome, everyone, to KWBU Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Burt Burleson, chaplain here at Baylor University. I'm talking with my friend Kirk Kaiser, longtime Wacoan and leader in the world of church music. Kurt, it's really good to be here with you today.
Thank you very much. This is kind of fun, isn't it?
It is. I was telling a friend yesterday that I was going to get to do this, and talking about how your music is a bit of a soundtrack to my life.
Really?
It's an honor to be here. I remember here are the four things I remember. I remember the first time a song moved me to tears, and I was 12 years old, and it was Passing On.
Oh, my goodness.
And then the first time I ever sang a solo in public was one of your songs.
Really?
That's for me.
Yeah.
And then at my wedding, we had the song, Oh, How He Loves You and Me.
Yeah.
And then when I was ordained, the choir sang, I Am Willing, Lord.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And if it wasn't, you know, a couple decades later, you and I became partners in ministry.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So I'm really glad to get to be here with you.
Thank you very much. You know, I don't like all those stories because the Pass It On experience, you were 12 years old and now you're bald-headed. And
yes.
That makes me very old.
Yes. Well, and you've been at your work here in Waco for over half a century now. And I want to get to that, but I want to back up first and let you talk a little bit about your early years and how you were shaped into the person you are, a musician. So you were born in Chicago?
Born in Chicago, and I was raised in a very strong Christian home. Lots of Bible reading and singing and lots of piano lessons very early on. And, it just sort of shaped my life, you know.
Was this the kind of thing where they saw something in you in terms of your music talent and said, we're going to get you lessons, or did all the kids have to take some lessons?
You know, in those days, I think we all took lessons.
You just did,
of
right?
some sort. But my parents sensed a little something special in me and made me go for it, made me work, made me practice. And that's a hard thing for – it was a hard thing for me because kids would yell, hey, Curdy, come on out and play, and all that kind of junk. But I was practicing.
You were practicing.
Scales and all that sort of stuff.
And part of the irony is, if I'm remembering right, you were in a Plymouth Brethren church.
I was, yes.
Where there were no pianos.
That's exactly right. It's unaccompanied singing. You're right.
So, I wonder how that impacted the way you play now. Maybe we'll come back to that later. But
Okay. Early
on, that was a big part of what you were doing all the time is playing. What was influencing you to play the way you played and move musically?
You know, I don't really know. I think back and I hear some of the stuff that I did years ago, and I think to myself, what did I do that? You know, but on the other hand, I think we've all become who we are through experience, through listening. Through people's suggestion to us. I've been to lots of jazz, and some very good friends of mine are jazz people, and they play like crazy. And they have influenced me, whether they know it or not, because of my listening to them.
You got involved with some of those kind of folks early on, and maybe even in the Christian world of broadcasting, am I remembering?
Well, you know, there was a very important radio station in Chicago. The call letters were WMBI, still are. And they did. It was connected to the Moody Bible Institute. And I did radio work there every week, playing when I was a very, very young man.
How old were you?
Maybe 12, 13.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you were on the air at 12.
I was on the air. And the other thing that I should tell you was, in those days, it was live radio. And when the red light goes on, you improvise.
Hmm.
whatever that thing is, you have to do it. And that was very important to me in retrospect, because it forced me to improvise, learn improvisation.
Which is part of your signature work.
That's exactly
really.
Right. I prefer not to have a lot of stuff planned. I much prefer to let it kind of flow as it happens, you know.
As you were growing up in Chicago and in school, somewhere along the way, something emerged in you as an identity. I am a musician, and I'm going to do this with my life. I mean,
I always studied classical music, and Mozart and Haydn and Handel and all those people, which is very important to me. At the same time, I did this radio work, which was also important to me. But and I was involved a lot in Christian banquets and whatever all in Chicago. And then when I graduated high school, I traveled with a singer for a year and a half. And somebody said to me, you know, Kurt, you should go to college. That was a very important moment in my life. And so I did. I went to American Conservatory in Chicago and then to Northwestern University.
Northwestern was for your graduate school.
I got my undergraduate degree there as well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Were you then, by the time you're finishing up grad school, are you thinking my work is going to be in the church, in the world of
Christian music? Because there was such a strong influence of church in my home, in my younger life, that it was just a natural outgrowth, I think, of my abilities. My dad said, I always remember this, and it's very important to me. He said, whatever you have been given has been given to you as a gift. It's not something you know how to do. It's a gift. It's given to you. So hone it, shine it up, burnish it, make it as good as you can make it, and give it back to the one who gave it to you.
And that was planted, and you were ready.
Absolutely, yeah. Because lots of times people have said to me, Kurt, why don't you try jazz? Go into secular, which would be far more lucrative, I suppose. But I didn't, because this strong tug was always a part of who I am.
And you met in your early young adult years, you met Pat in
yes.
a setting, right? I mean, a kind of a
yeah,
Christian
that's right. I was doing work in Billings, Montana for a year and a half. Radio, and that's when I met Pat, who's from Wyoming, and although she was going to a nursing school in Chicago, very near where I lived, and people don't believe that, but it's true.
So, how in the world did you wind up moving from Chicago down to Little Waco, Texas?
Yeah, while I was going to school at Northwestern. Graduate school, I guess. Gerald McCracken, who was at Baylor University in graduate school, I think, came to Chicago to visit with me and talk to me about moving down here. And I thought to myself, you know, that's a really nice idea because it fits perfectly into who I want to be and what I want to do. And I really love that notion. Yeah.
So there were when you came to work at Word. With Gerald, there were just a handful of you guys, right?
It was very small. I like to say it was very familial. We were maybe 8 or 10 people there. That's all.
So you were a fairly young man and kind of put in a pretty significant position of leadership in a company.
Well, right after high school, I traveled with this singer for a year and a half, which was a great experience. And but I was tired of being on the road. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. Playing all these things over and over and over again. And so this was a wonderful invitation to me, yeah.
Something happened here, a kind of synergy between the talent that you guys began to assimilate here and what was going on in the culture. And it seems to me as those in leadership of this company, you also were offering leadership to this broader world of Christian music in a real important time.
Yes, because Word, as I say, was very small and very kind of familial, and we had one bathroom, as I remember it. We were on Franklin Drive over here in Waco, And I think to myself, what am I doing? But at the same time, and it was very provincial. They just had Texas kind of artists, and which is fine. But I brought a whole nother culture to Word, which they hadn't known. And that was very important, I think, in its growth.
So you broadened their scope musically.
Exactly.
And then the world began to change. I mean, the Beatles happened not long after you came
right,
here.
Exactly,
right.
Yeah.
And you were in this place where there was a lot of young people because of the university.
Yes.
When did it occur to you? I remember you talking about this once where you said, we need to give them the music they want, meaning the young people.
Back in the late 60s, Ralph Carmichael, who was a very important figure in music, in church music certainly, I called him on the phone one day and I said, you know, Ralph, let's do something that makes it with kids. And so we ended up writing this musical from which Pass It On comes. And it's kind of fun to see how all that happened. I said, well, how do we start? He said, why don't you write what you feel in Waco? And the next time you come out here, we'll look at it. And I'll write out here. And, you know, and so we finally assimilated enough material. And then Billy Ray Hearn, who was another Baylor graduate, did the continuity between them, or we did the continuity between it. And we staged it, and we went to New York with it. It was really kind of fun.
If you've just joined us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Bert Burleson, and I'm here today talking with Kurt Kaiser about his leadership in the world of music, and especially here in Waco. You were just talking about having created with several others, Tell It Like It Is, which if you grew up in the church when I did, particularly in evangelical life, it seemed like everybody did the musical. I've never met a person my age who was in a youth group who didn't sing Tell It Like It Is.
It was incredible to me because not only did it pay a lot of bills, but it reached a lot of kids. I'll always remember a lady grabbing me by the lapel and saying to me, my son is a drummer in this church now. What are you going to do next for my son? Because there's nothing else for him to play.
I remember the first time I was in a church with a drum set, and everybody was a little nervous.
Absolutely.
This is long before I knew who you were.
Absolutely. Scared of that.
So this was, it felt, though looking back, it doesn't seem so, but it was fairly edgy to move from gospel hymnody to stuff that had different sounds. Talk a little bit about, if you can, what was going on musically there.
Well, you see, the Southern Baptists really did a lot of stuff, good stuff for choral group, young kids. But they didn't sing a lot of, it was all classically based, I think, and was rather superficial, I thought. Along with that were wonderful hymns that I grew up with, that I recorded just recently, and the old things that we all sang growing up. You sang, mm-hmm. and I sang, and we all sang, and it was great. It was a great experience for us, and it was kind of fun to be able to bring something like that to the fore. Now, we wrote Tell It Like It Is in the idiom of the kids. I can't do that these days because I don't know what their idiom is. I certainly don't know their rhythms. It's passed me by.
We found ourselves as kids, though, wanting to sing it.
Absolutely.
I think that was the key. It was like when we heard it, we said, oh, let's do that.
Let's do that.
And we began picking up our guitars.
That's exactly right.
And learning how to play it.
Yeah. And as writers, we did not want to do any sort of like damage to any of the doctrines that were important in church life.
Well, so this was a pretty pivotal movement in lots of ways because,
yes.
and you see it continuing today, and the impact so of those early years in the 60s has really changed in some sense what church feels like for a lot of people on Sunday morning, for better or for worse sometimes, you know?
I do know. Yeah.
You invested an awful lot of yourself in not only that company, Word, but in that movement. And I'm curious because this is a leadership series. I mean, you became a leader. What what did you sacrifice in those years? I mean, it seems like to me, anytime someone gives themselves away, as you've talked about doing, there's something else they don't get to do. Are there things you, as you look back to those years, you were aware of, you were having to really decide to do this as opposed to that, or you had to travel a lot, for instance?
Yeah, but I never look upon any of that as being, being detrimental to my growth, who I am. I just did what I did in those days, just as you're doing what you do now. And someday you're going to look back and say, man, I was on, we did a radio show at KWBU way back when, and it was a really good time. But you didn't. You don't look upon yourself now as sacrificing a lot, I don't think. You do what you do.
So as you moved into that experience of being a leader in church music, I mean, you were, I've heard you tell story after story of the people you encountered. How was that changing you as a musician, as a Christian, as someone in leadership?
Well, I suppose being in leadership, that's not a very good term, I don't think, but being in that position, it forced me to listen to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I listened to lots of folks, all kinds of music makers. And I found I've gravitated toward the kinds of people who are communicators. I don't like to be around musicians. I like to be around communicators. And that's just a natural thing for me. You know, I don't want to spend a lot of time because I feel musicians are a dime a dozen. But communicators, that's something else again.
So a person may be a musician but is communicating something.
Oh, it's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible. So that you don't have to write on the page everything that the guy should do.
Ah.
He just does it without – it's intuitive with him.
I was thinking about our interview and the fact that you're an artist – and that when we tend to think about leadership, we often in our minds go to institutions and organizations and, you know, businesses like Word and moving people along. And sometimes as someone in that leadership role too, I find myself thinking that that runs counter to creative processes that are slower and more intuitive and not that efficient sometimes.
See, you're probably right. It in a way, it drives me crazy to think that the university pace of life is very slow. I mean, you know, it just takes forever to get something accomplished because they have all these committees, whereas in my work, I can just do it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's spontaneous now.
What helps you in – because I do think you're exercising the gift God gave you, but also there is a – you're manifesting a leadership role through the years as you were creative, you know, in the moment. What helps you get there? Are there certain things you need? And so as I'm thinking about, you know, any leader, how do they get to their good stuff? Are there certain things
I think
need?
The good stuff happens when you go through some difficulty. I don't think the good stuff happens. Mm-hmm. In other words, you have to dig down.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who write music these days who are – it's very superficial. Who cares?
It feels a little too happy-clappy sometimes.
Absolutely. But it's not going to really happen until that person goes through some very tough times. That's when it happens, I think.
It's interesting as a baby boomer to listen to the artists I grew up with who are now still writing.
Yeah.
Both Christian and secular.
Right.
And that, you know, in their 20s, they were writing about their prom date.
Yeah, right.
And now they're writing about spiritual issues, even if they're not particularly, confessional
Christian.
In their
faith.
Yeah. So there's something about what life does to you that takes your art to a different place.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. When you were younger, it was far more programmatic. But now that you're older, you've lived. Talk about your experience.
You have a message to communicate.
You have because you've been there.
Yeah,
I think so.
If you've just joined us, this is KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. I'm Bert Burleson, and I'm talking with my friend Kirk Kaiser today about his impact on music and his experience in Waco, Texas, now for over a half a century.
Right.
It's really amazing to think about. As I think of your journey here, the first couple of decades were very different than the last few decades in terms of the kinds of music you were producing,
right.
The setting you were in.
Absolutely.
You were in kind of the hustle and bustle of a business in the first decades.
Right.
These last decades, your professional life changed some. You've been involved locally. Talk a little bit about the things artistically locally that you've been doing over the last
few
decades.
Well, most of the things I've done locally have been connected to Baylor University. I remember I was involved in music making for, I want to say it might be the 150th anniversary of Baylor, called Towers on the Brazos. And I used some friends of mine who are in music, and one of them is Ted Nichols, who was a graduate of Baylor. I thought it would be really a nice touch to have him do some music cues. And then I did Bill Purcell, who teaches at Belmont, and a very fine pianist and a good orchestrator, and he did some writing. And I did some, and some other people. But mostly I wanted to involve Baylor University people and people who really had something to say musically.
You were writing for a community in a way.
I wrote for a community.
And the same thing happened as you became involved, as you helped to start Dayspring Baptist Church.
Oh, yeah.
You were writing for a community. So that was very different in the 60s when you were writing for every teenager.
Oh, yeah.
In a church.
Yeah.
So... you said it earlier, you referred to my idiom became outdated. I mean,
yes.
I knew that idiom.
Yeah.
How did your writing musically change in the 80s, 90s, in the last decade?
I think it comes, I don't know, but I think it comes through maturity. It comes through listening. It comes through life experience. It's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And... there's no way I could write. I mean, it's embarrassing to think about writing something that might have been written in the 60s now. I can't do it.
I'm aware because I've heard you so often, particularly in sacred settings. You've led organizationally through the years, but the leadership that I think is your legacy is what I want to call it priestly. And you might not have ever thought of it that way.
That's kind of scary.
But what I feel like you do with your music is you lead people deeply into the presence of God.
Now, yeah.
I don't know that you sit down at the piano thinking, here we go, y'all. But that's, I think, what happens in the room when you begin to play. Are you aware musically? Or are you just sort of, this is your capacity to improvise and to go? Or do you... think, I've got to start here and take them there?
Well, improvisation is just off the top of your head, or in the moment. You have to do it in the moment. That's what improvisation is. And that's, I never give too much thought about where I'm going. I do think about where the end of the phrase is.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be here at the end of the phrase. Well, that'll feel good. I do that. But I don't give too much thought to other
stuff. I guess the word musically is that you resolve what is happening in the piece that you're playing. But I want to say theologically, as a pastor, it seems like that's what happens when you play for people, is that there's something in the room. There's some sermon that's just been preached, or there's people there who bring their lives into that moment of worship, and you sort of take them to a place, not that things are fixed, but there's kind of a resolution.
Yes, I think you're right. I think there's a kind of, and this comes back from life experience, you just build on what they're doing, and you can bring it to a conclusion. I remember very, very well when I was a kid, I went on a tour in Kansas, Nebraska, somewhere back in there. And the head of the Youth for Christ movement, wonderful guy, played the saxophone. He said to me, he always remembered this, he says, do all the verses.
Hmm.
In other words, don't cut it short. Just say everything you want to say. And that's the way I've treated life. and my music has say what you want to say. And in the offertories at Sunday mornings, I just do what I want to do, say what I want to say, and give that as an offering to God.
Church music is sort of all over the place now.
Yep.
And again, you know, that's exciting at times, and sometimes we wish we could rein it in.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
So what do you think, in the time we have left, what do you think is needed in terms of leadership for this reality we call Christian music, in terms of where it ought to go? If someone were to sit with you who's saying, what should I be writing, or what does the church need, what would you just off the top of your head say?
I don't really know exactly, but I do know this. I hear a lot of music these days from people who have never gone to school, who don't know the rules. I think it's important to know the rules. And when I was a kid at Northwestern University, I learned theory and I learned orchestration and I learned a lot of stuff that has stood me in very good stead, but these days, there are a lot of kids who come along who don't know they're breaking rules.
So there's no shortcuts.
I don't think there are.
And I think I would say what your music reflects is a kind of beauty and depth, even though sometimes it's minimalist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a simplicity to it as well. And that is a kind of proclamation to those of us who are sitting in the pew.
Yeah.
Wherever we're going on our journey, there are no shortcuts here.
That's
depth
exactly
to depth
right.
of faith and significant theology
yeah.
and great thinking and certainly
right.
the beauty
yeah.
that worship it wants.
Yeah.
And it wants us to know
yeah.
A different level of experience than we have just sort of out there.
Yeah.
Right? So
that's
we
exactly right.
Step into these places. I'm glad for these years for you. You
mm.
know, I think your dad was right. You had a gift and you gave it and you keep doing it. But I'm also glad that you get to go to Lady Bear games. And you know, I think that's a gift the community gives back to its servants to say, do what you want to do now. And you get to do that in these days, don't you?
Yeah, it's been very, very interesting. My life has been very full. I know that. It's been very interesting because now I do the things that I really want to do, and that's go watch the Bears play ball. And we went last Saturday to Texas College. Yeah, to watch the men play football against Texas Tech, and it was great fun.
And occasionally go to Colorado.
We have a place there, yeah.
But then you sit back down in a studio like you did
with this new
project.
I did this thing, and I thought to myself, wow. I can play all these songs.
Yeah.
I met a lot of these composers. I met them. I'll always remember this. I was just a kid, a little guy, maybe 8, 9, 10, and I met George Bernard, who wrote The Old Rugged Cross. Well, a lot of people probably don't even know that tune anymore. And I wrote, at the same time, I met the guy who wrote Beyond the Sunset, Virgil Brock. And, it was kind of fun to meet those people. And I've met a lot of composers down through the years, hymn writers, and Bev Shea has been a very important influence in my life.
So then maybe this is a good place to end, because what you're doing in these days is introducing or reintroducing some of us to the legacy of our faith.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting now, even though we were all eaten up with everything contemporary back in the 60s.
Yeah.
I, as someone who works with college students, while that's still true, everybody loves their music.
Sure.
I'm amazed that they're drawn also. They have a need for the past.
Yeah.
And that's musical and it's theological.
Yeah.
And that's your gift to us in these days. And I work over here. I get to sit and worship with you.
Oh, that's nice. Thank you.
It's pretty rare that I don't tear up when you're playing an offertory.
It's that bad, huh?
Well, Kurt, as always, it's just great to spend time with
fun.
You. Thank you for being here with
me
today.
Thank you so much. It's great fun.
Lord be with you.
Thank you.
This conversation was recorded November 19th, 2013 in the KWBU studios.